is up, everybody? Welcome to another episode of the Overstated NBA Show. We are back. We're recording this on a Wednesday night, and the gang is back together. Brett is back. He's fired up and ready to go. We got producer Mikey, but my producer is in my ear, told me to say the stat for you guys. My man, Drew Holiday. Shout out to Nathan Marzion on Twitter. Tonight, Drew Holiday became the first player in NBA history to put up 58-8 in fewer than 35 minutes. He did it in 32 minutes. Big Bucks win. They are now up three games against Boston. That magic number to clinch the one seed is now four games. So, hey, boys, I'll bring you guys in here. I'm going to bump you up. We're going to rip a shot here. I missed National Whiskey Day on Monday, so do that. And, of course, dude, no podcast is complete with the Now you know, dude, it's podcast time. It's for real. Brett, it's great to see you. We don't usually record video, but we always have video on. Brett is looking unbelievably fly right now. He is sitting outside a cabana. It looks beautiful in Hawaii. He's got the hat on, the Hawaiian shirt. This dude is a sexy mofo, man. He's looking good. Brett, what's up, baby?
What's up, man? Yeah, I'm just enjoying the weather out here, chilling in a pavilion. And just ready to record this pod and grill up some steaks when I'm done and make a little night of it out here. So, you know, I got no complaints. It's needless to say. But, yeah, great to be on with you guys, man.
Dude, I love it, man. We missed you last week, obviously. And just so that I had a coffee today at 3:30 because I was so jacked about doing this podcast and I did not want to get tired. So, dude, I'm jacked and ready to go.
I had one of those Celsius energy drinks. Like,
oh, my wife drinks those. You're nuts.
About an hour ago. Nah, they're good, man.
I thought you hated coffee, Steve.
I only drink black coffee, and I have a little bit in the morning when I leave the gym, and then lately, I don't know, dude. You know how it is. I mean, when you have kids, like, I want to.
You need coffee. I feel you.
Well, that too. But like, when I come home from work, like, I want to be excited to play with my kids and run around with them instead of just being like exhausted. So yeah, usually I do green tea. So here's. Oh, we're getting a little off topic here. So I have like this much, like half a cup of coffee in the morning after the gym, protein shake in the sauna, coffee, right?
Protein shake in the sauna?
Yeah, dude, you just mix it up, dude. I'll just sit in there, dude, and just vibe out, man. It's awesome. I love it. It's like my alone time. And then I will, I'll chug the first water, like 12 ounces. Then I'll do another 12 ounces. Then I'll drink some green tea because, dude, got to get that digestive tract going. And then, dude, I'm just pounding water, 2 p.m. If I'm feeling a little sluggish, coffee. But you guys know me. I'm high energy like all the time. So, but if I'm not, coffee and then just down it with more water. I'm probably close to a gallon of water a day. So, yeah, man, dude, I'm good. I usually, except for tonight, like when we do podcasts, I generally try not to drink during the week. But, I mean, you know, sometimes it works. Sometimes it doesn't. What are you going to do?
Yeah, man, I feel you. If I can keep it under 600 milligrams of caffeine a day, I feel like I'm doing good. Like, cause I'll drink two cups every morning, like before I do anything. And then I'll usually have like an energy drink in the afternoon, like one of those Celsius drinks or like a Reign or something like that. And sometimes I go more than that, but if I can keep it to that, like I feel pretty good, but for the same reasons, like, you know, I've got a very high energy 5-year old and it's like, I just, if I don't have that caffeine, I just can't keep up with a man. Like, I just want to take a nap. So, and then, yeah, before the podcast is tricky though. Like, I never want to get too jacked up on caffeine, like right before we start, cause I'll just like talk everybody's ear off and talk over everybody. But if I don't have it, I might be a little too sluggish. So, like, my sweet spot, I think, is like an hour before the pod and then have a couple of beers to kind of level it out. And, you know, we've been doing this for 3 years. I'm still figuring it out, but I think we're in a good place today.
Well, I remember with when we had another person on this podcast and you and I were waking up at like, I think it was 5 in the morning my time, 3 in the morning your time, and you and I were both just like
oh my god, I remember those days, man. Yeah, like 3 in the morning recording, like, because that's the only time we could do it. So this works pretty good for me. It's 3:45 my time right now. Like, this is pretty easy. You know what, man? Since I just said that we've been doing it for 3 years, like, to be honest, I think this is like our 3-year anniversary pod because we started it like very early April.
Right around COVID. It was after COVID.
It was like, I think it was like April 3rd, 2020, I believe. So like, this might be the closest. Maybe it'll be next week's, but we're right in there at our 3-year mark. And we've been pretty consistent. I don't think we've ever gone like more than a month without recording it. Usually every week, if not twice a week. So shout out to us. Cheers.
Yeah, dude. I'll cheers to that, man. because it was it's been a long time. Like I remember DMing you and just being like, you know, from that's going back to the Ringer NBA days, and I was like, hey man, let's start a podcast. Fuck it, I got nothing else to do. We're all just kind of sitting at home, and you know, you introduced us to Mikey and everybody else. It's been an awesome blessing, and it's been a lot of fun, man. It is awesome. I do gotta say, wow, we're getting a little bit off topic. It is awesome seeing you grow, Brett. Like, for real, man. Like, I'm being dead serious. Like, I told you from when you started that you needed to get on Twitter. Like, you were built for it. You were perfect for it. You're kind of like, I don't really want to. Now, man, what are you at? Like, 8,000 followers, dude, in like 4 or 5 months? Like, dude, you're...
No, but, you know, I've got definitely some growth this NBA season, though. I mean, I'm on it a lot, you know, like to grow an account on Twitter. Like, you really just have to consistently put out content, unless you're famous, then you just get followers. But I'm not famous, so like for someone like me, it's just like every day pretty much you got to just put out like multiple pieces of like content that people actually like, and then the account grows, you know, slowly. But yeah, that's been cool, man. It's just been cool to have that much reach and so many people to interact with and shit. So I'm definitely glad I got on there. Sometimes I'm like, man, what if I had just joined Twitter in like, you know, 2009 like everybody else or whatever. Like, I wonder, you know, but I feel like I kind of got on at the right time, like for me, because it does consume a lot of my time. So I don't know, man, that I probably got to rein it in a little bit. But balance. Yeah, it's been
balance.
Fun.
It's all about balance.
Yeah, it's addictive, though, man. Like, you know, you get that you get addicted to kind of like the feedback. And then you also just, you know, just as an NBA junkie, it's like a great place to just consume content and get news and all that. So, but yeah, people told me forever to get on Twitter, especially you, and I'm glad I did, but it's a little bit of a problem. I gotta rein it in a bit months here.
There's times, like, you know, I get the kids to bed, like I'll watch whatever NBA game's on, and I'll clean up, you know, I'll have it on in the background, and I'm like, all right, man, like I've been saying to myself, I'm gonna make a Brooke Lopez video for like 3 weeks. But just like just to your point, man, like you actually have to like sit down, chop everything up like you did. It's time consuming, where like I just want to put my phone down and just watch basketball for like and not even talk to anybody, not worry about anything, just zone out and focus on what game I'm watching, dude. And it's super fun, man. But you know what I
did the other day, like I found it, because I get it, like it is to make those videos, like, you know, you get fast, like I'm about as fast as you can be, I think, making those videos. And even then, it's like it's pretty time consuming if you're trying to do like one or two clip videos a day. But the other day I was at the gym just on the exercise bike, and I was like, all right, I'm just gonna go back and watch every single one of Zach Collins' assists this season, record them, and then chop them up. And so like I spent 30 minutes on the exercise bike, and I made a whole video of Zach Collins hitting cutters with passes, and like, you know, it did pretty well on Twitter. Zach himself saw it and liked it. But but I'm like, maybe that's kind of, because it gets me to the gym. It makes the time go by fast when I'm on the exercise bike, and then it's not eating into my other time. So, you know, we'll figure out how to do it. But you know, it's not like there's any money in it at this point. But again, it's cool to build up a little following. But
overstated NBA show podcast, man. We need some sponsors back, dude. High noon, man. Come on. But today,
Manscaped keeps sending me shit.
Oh, I like it, man. Hey, man, I want that.
I just got something. My wife's like, what'd you order from Manscaped? I'm like, nothing, I swear. Like, they're just sending me shit.
Come on, Manscaped. I want that face shaver. Come on, baby. But hey, man, so we obviously, you weren't feeling good and you had some shit to do last week. So it was Mikey and I, and we kind of changed it up. We changed it up for a very big reason, right? Because we want to talk about the OKC City Thunder. You are one of the biggest OKC fans that I know. I mean, you've been on them for at least a year and a half now, kind of when they've been going through this rebuilding process, and you're loving everything that they've done. And as of this podcast, as of this recording, and everything can change in the West very quickly. Like I said, it looks like Dallas, they're up on Philly right now with, what is it, like halfway through the fourth quarter. So who knows what's going to happen. But as of today, man, the Oklahoma City Thunder are the 10th seed in the Western Conference. I believe Minnesota is the 7th. The Pelicans are the 8th, and the Lakers are the 9th. So there's a lot of stuff going on there. All those teams are separated by just 2 games. It's getting very, very exciting. Before we get into the Oklahoma City Thunder, I mean, Brett, what are kind of your thoughts about this Western Conference? Do you, I mean, obviously, I think Utah is too far out of it, although they are only 2.5 games back, so who knows what could happen. But it looks like between Dallas, OKC, the Lakers, the Pelicans, and Minnesota, and obviously Golden State is a 6 seed. They're only up on Minnesota by half a game. Like, it could get a little crazy. It could get a little crazy. So what are your kind of thoughts on that? All that jumbled up mess? I know that we were talking offline before we were recording. God, we need to just start recording it and just fucking send some shit out. But it looks like the top 4 seeds are almost basically set. I know Kevin Durant's coming back. I know the Clippers are half a game behind them. But it looks like the 4 seeds are going to be Denver, Memphis, Sacramento, Phoenix. Clippers, I mean, I don't know. I don't want to make a bold prediction and have this, you know, just be totally wrong. But it looks like they have the 5th seed locked up, possibly. What are kind of your thoughts about that whole mess?
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing. Like, Golden State's only a half game up on Minnesota, like you said, and then the Clippers are only half game up on Golden State, and then Phoenix is only a half game up on the Clippers. But yeah, Denver, Memphis, and Sac do seem to be locked in. And yeah, man, we're just still in kind of anything can happen mode, really, between like the 4 and the 11. Like, it's looking like Utah's probably not going to get in. They're a game and a half back of Dallas, so they're in the 12. But, I mean, when you look at the rest of it, like, I think the 6 is a really fascinating spot because, obviously, that means you avoid the play-in. And in doing so, probably avoid, you know, either Denver or Memphis in the first round. And it looks like you'd be playing Sac if you can get the 6 seed. Sac is an awesome team. They're not a team that anybody should take lightly. They can outscore just about anybody. They're dangerous, and they've got one of the best, if not the best, home court advantage in the league. Maybe not better than Golden State, but they're right there. So with that said, though, that's probably the team you want to play out of Denver, Memphis, Phoenix, and them. Like, that's, I don't want to play Phoenix. I don't want to play Memphis, and Denver's pretty scary in their own right. So Sac's probably the team you want to play. So I think everybody would love to get that 6 seed. The Clippers could look to move down to be in the 6. Minnesota obviously wants to avoid the play-in and beat out Golden State for the 6. Golden State probably wants to stay in the 6. So I feel like that's kind of what everybody's going for now. Then you look at like the bottom of the play-in, like Dallas and OKC and the Lakers really are just trying to get into the play-in at this point. So it's crazy that Dallas has fallen this far.
Ooh, do you want to get into that right away? Because I got some thoughts.
We could get into Dallas right away. It's just go ahead, man.
I don't know, man. Like, I was with you. Now, granted, so, all right, just so everyone knows, I don't want this to be too outdated because Philly just took the lead. They're up 105-103. I was with you, man. When they first made that trade for Kyrie, I thought that this would be a lot better than what it is, at least offensively. And I know, Brett, you and I, we had some disagreements on this. I knew last season, before the season started, that Jason Kidd was going to be in. I think I said on our prediction podcast before the season started, I said he's going to be top 3 in coach of the year. He's going to come in there. He's going to do some different things, and he's going to be really good. And I said by year 2, people are going to see, we're going to find out if this, you know, this stint with the Lakers and him being around LeBron and Frank Vogel and winning a championship, if it's going to help him adjust. And I just don't understand, and I'm curious to get your thoughts on this, Brett. Like, everyone talks about Sacramento and how they don't play defense, right? Like, that's their big thing. But their offense, Mike Brown literally said, kind of like, screw it. We're just going to outscore everybody. I don't understand why Dallas doesn't play that same kind of, hey, man, we're just going to outscore you. And I know Jason Kidd from his time in Brooklyn, from his time in Milwaukee, he really, really wants his teams to play defense. But at some point, you just got to throw that out the window and just try and outscore everybody because you don't have the defensive personnel to play the kind of defense that you want to play. And it just seems like, man, just they're on national TV a lot. I watch them on League Pass, and I'll watch some of their highlights if it's a game that I can't miss because I'm super intrigued by it. But I don't know if it's this season. It just feels like it. Maybe it's recency bias. Like, Luka is just on the refs every other play. He's not getting back on defense anyways. And a lot of this, a lot of their issues have nothing to do with Kyrie Irving. I know that the media, everyone is waiting for Kyrie to screw up and be like, oh, this is why you shouldn't trade for Kyrie. But he's been okay. It's like the rest of their team like hasn't figured out that we just need to score, outscore everybody. And what do we – I just don't like their style of play. I don't like the attitude. I don't like the vibe by them. I don't know, man. Like, I want to get your thoughts on this because I have a theory, but I want to hear your thoughts on it first.
Yeah, I mean, one big difference with them, just like we know they've got a great offense. Like, I think they're a borderline top five offense. Maybe they're like sixth or seventh. Like, last year they actually weren't quite as good, but pretty much the last few years with Luka, like, you know, what was it, 2 years ago, they had at the time the most efficient offense in NBA history. So they have this great offense, but they're slow. They play slow. You know, they're probably certainly bottom five in pace in the NBA. And that's just Luka. That's just the way you play with Luka. Like, you're not a fast team. Whereas like the Kings, for instance, are pretty fast. Like, they're probably in the top 10 in pace. So it's like, they've got a great offense, but it's just a little different in terms of that. Like, they're just not going to overpower you in terms of outscoring you the way a team like the Kings or the Nuggets might. Look, man, I don't like the blaming Kyrie stuff at all. Like, I know that I know that like their kind of slide coincides with his arrival, but like, how are you going to blame Kyrie or even Jason Kidd when this is your roster? Like, that's the problem. Like, they're just not, they don't have a good roster outside of Kyrie and Luka. I mean, like, guys like Reggie Bullock's like a big part of their team. Like, Dwight Powell and Maxi Kleba are like a big part of what they do. You know, like, how do you expect to be a good team when that's the case? Like, I really like Josh Green. I really like Jaden Hardy, but those are young guys. Like, those are guys I hope that they stick with going forward. I think they're both going to be really good players. Green's been really effective this season, but like, they're just, their roster sucks. And we knew, you know, when they made that trade for Kyrie, when they gave up Dinwiddie and Dorian Finney-Smith, that they were going to be pretty depleted. And that's really what we're seeing. I think the most optimistic of us were kind of like, you know, maybe they can just be so good offensively that that the lack of defense and the lack of depth isn't as big of an issue. But those things are massive issues. They can't defend. They can't rebound. I think they're the worst rebounding team in the league. And they really don't have a lot of depth, especially up front. Bill Simmons talked about this on his podcast a couple weeks ago. They did a really good job, actually, just running down like just how strong the center position has become in the NBA. Like, almost every team has a really good center now. And oftentimes many, you know, multiple good bigs. And the Mavs have Dwight Powell, Maxi Kleba, and like washed JaVale McGee. So like,
that's back how are you in NBA history?
He is, man. He had a great run, but he's just, if this was McGee from a couple of years ago, he'd actually be like maybe the perfect big for them, just in terms of his, you know, his ability to catch lob passes and protect the rim. Like, he actually would be a really nice fit, but he just hasn't been that guy, man. And when you go down the West, like, all these teams in the West have good centers, whether it's Denver with Jokic or Memphis with Triple J or the Kings with Sabonis or the Suns with Ayton. Like, the Mavs have Dwight Powell. And it's like, so that's where I just have a problem with people blaming Kyrie, and where I have a problem with people even blaming Jason Kidd. Kidd, I think he hasn't done himself any favors with like his post-game interviews. Like, he said some really wacky shit that I think makes him look a lot worse than he actually is. But some of this is certainly coaching. But I think the roster is the issue, man. I agree with you.
And to your point about Kyrie, Kyrie is plus 91 since joining the team. So that's 16 games. They're 7-9 in that stretch. Kyrie is 26, 5, and 6 on 50, 38, 94 shooting splits. They're 15th in offense and 23rd in defense since he's been there. But the reason that I bring this up, right, so you have been a bigger Christian Wood fan than most, right? And Jason Kidd has said, like, hey, I don't want to play Christian Wood a lot because he doesn't play defense, right? Well, like, why don't you just play him? Play him 35 minutes a game. I mean, in his last 10 games, he's playing 23 minutes a game. He's averaging 14 points and 6 rebounds a game. Like, play that dude, man. Like, at this point, what do you got to lose? Like, why? I'd be playing that dude 30, 35 minutes a game and letting him roll. Like, we have seen, nobody has ever said that Christian Wood is not a good offensive player, right? And I think, Mikey, you can double check this. Did they give up a first round pick for him? I think they might have.
A late first rounder. Yeah.
Yeah. But so play the dude. Like, at this point, like, dude, you're not even in. I mean, again, we're recording this. Who knows what's going to happen in this Philly game? Like I said, they could win and be right back up there. But, like, you're not even in the playoffs right now. Play the dude. And that's what I'm saying with you. Like, I like this, because I'm going to ask you a follow up question here. I'm not blaming Jason Kidd 100% for this. Like, yeah, their roster is very flawed. But, like, to your point, he went out and he called them out after that Charlotte game, the first time they played them. And then, like, Charlotte was just crushing them to start the game on the second time they played them. Like, clearly something is a little bit off there. Again, I think Jason Kidd's job is safe. I'm not saying anything, not jumping to conclusions like that. But play the dude. But this brings me to my next point with you. A lot has been made of Mark Cuban is a fun owner. He wanted to upgrade all the facilities when he got there. He's been to 2 NBA finals. Clearly he cares about winning. He's on Shark Tank. Like, he has no problem paying his players except for Jalen Brunson. But they don't really land free agents. So I wanted to ask you, Brett, I think you're the perfect person to ask this. Let me rephrase this. It's very difficult, clearly, to build a team around Luka Doncic just based on his usage, how much he dominates the ball. He's brilliant, right? You always want him to have the ball in his hands because he always is generally going to make the right play. But I guess, do you trust Dallas to build a competitive team around him? Because they gave up, like I said, we were talking offline. They traded a first-round pick for Kristaps Porzingis. They gave up on him. He had some injury issues. They traded him to Washington. He's looked pretty good this year. He's looked very good this year, right? Maybe he just needed to get healthy. Maybe he needed a fresh start. Who knows, right? Could be all of those things. But, like, if you're Dallas and you don't – let's just say, worst-case scenario, they don't make the playoffs this season. Maybe they get, like, I don't know, like the 11th pick or something like that. And let's just say Kyrie's like, all right, man, deuces, I'm out of here. Like, what do you do? Like, how am I supposed to trust, let's say I was a Dallas fan, how am I supposed to trust Dallas to build a competitive championship-level team around Luka Doncic?
Yeah, it's tough, man. Yeah, between when you look at their track record of just kind of like settling for guys. Like,
and real quick, right, Brett, I'm going to cut you off. This is a team that won the NBA championship with Dirk, and their owner was so worried about paying the luxury tax, he literally broke the team up the year after they won the title. He's like, nah, I'm good. Let Tyson Chandler go. Everyone remembers that, all that stuff. So, like, how are you supposed to trust this dude to build this team around Luka?
Yeah, man, it's tough. Like I don't, I do wish the Porzingis thing had worked out. Like, I wish they had kept him and just gone forward with him, because I always felt like they, you know, we saw them on the court together. Like, they had moments where they looked brilliant. Where it looked like this could really work. I don't think he was ever fully healthy, certainly not towards the end. Like, you just have to wonder if they had stuck that out and never made that Dinwiddie trade, and you were getting the guy that you've seen in Washington this year next to Luka, like, what could that have been? I mean, I don't know. Maybe they don't make the Western Conference Finals last year. I don't know. Like, they did have a lot of success without him, you know, after that trade, but I'm kind of a Porzingis fan. But yeah, the big concern, like, if you're Luka, is just looking at their assets and what potential do they even have to make deals going forward? Like, what's the best possible outcome? Because, you know, there's no game-changing free agents really in this coming off season, right? It's like Fred VanVleet and, you know, a couple other guys, but there's nobody huge. And even if there were, like you said, like you would think Dallas is a desirable location and maybe for the right free agent, it would be, but you know, what do you do? Do you just try to push forward with Kyrie? You know, maybe get a little stronger around the edges, hope guys like Hardy and Green continue to improve. But it just that's not enough, though. That's essentially the same team you're working with now. You know, do you sign and trade Kyrie? I think that makes some sense, but then it's like, what can you get back from him and how much better does that really make you? You know, at some point, like, it's kind of on Luka a little bit, like in a basketball sense, like, okay. Like I know that we don't have the best team around him. Like I just was talking about it. Like, I'm glad you mentioned Christian Wood. Like I was optimistic about that, but for whatever reason, he's not playing much. I think I just checked the stats. He's barely played tonight. I guess the defense is that big of an issue. But like at some point though, you know, I think Luka has to be looked at a little bit, like, because if you're really a top five player in the NBA, like these guys aren't trash around you. Like you've got some decent players. Like, so we're not saying you need to win a championship with this roster. That's probably impossible. But like, if you're going to not even make the play-in potentially as a top five player, don't you think like at some point you kind of are like, okay, like maybe some of this is on him. Like, cause if he's that guy, like you can't miss the play-in if you're a top five player in the NBA. So I think that's part of it too, where like maybe he's not the easiest guy to play with. I don't know. Well, he can do a lot. Single-handedly, he can do a lot.
Can I follow up on that with you? It's like, you know, James Harden caught a lot of flack near the end of his time in Houston. But I think people forget that James Harden got a lot of praise his first couple of years in Houston because he was unbelievable. And then, like, they just couldn't get over that hump, right? They brought in Chris Paul, obviously the injuries. You know, I think if they play that Western Conference against Golden State a couple more times, they'd probably win that. But neither here nor there. But, like, Luka dominates the ball so much. And I'm glad you brought that up, that some of this kind of has to fall on Luka a little bit.
Like, has to.
You got to make your teammates better at some point, man. Like, I'm with you, man. Or go to Jason Kidd or go to whomever you got to go to. Say, hey, man, Christian Wood needs to be playing more. Like, I need him out there more than 23 minutes a game or whatever it was. Like, what does – I would be curious because Luka doesn't really say a lot, but, like, what does he want? Because, like – and if you're a player – do you even want to play with Luka? Like, in a basketball sense, like, he's going to always find the open man. He's going to do this. He's going to do that. But, like, I'm sorry, man. Like, I like Luka as much as the next guy. I can't stand the constant bitching at the refs. Like, I that would just drive me nuts. Like, even if I was his teammate and he screws something up, oh, now I'm running back to play defense and, you know, I'm playing 4-on-5 while you're still bitching at the ref. And I was just looking at his contract. I mean, he signed through 26-27, but 26-27 is a player option. So he technically could leave this team, you know, at the end of the 25-26 season. And I don't want to say – I want players to stay with their team. I'm not saying that Luka should leave Dallas. But, like, we could – I want to say this again. We could be looking at the beginning of the end from this time in Dallas, because I really have no idea how this team – expects or what their plan is to build a championship contending roster around this dude. I have no idea how you do it. I really don't.
It's tough, man, because like I don't doubt for a second that if you put the right supporting cast around Luka, like say you gave him the guys Harden has in Philly, which is obviously Embiid, like, but like another superstar, a couple of lockdown defenders, a dynamic young guard, a couple shooters. Like, I don't know. You could go through the league and pick your supporting cast out of like the better teams, right? If you give one of those cast to Luka, if you give him the Denver supporting cast, even minus Jokic, like give him Jamal Murray, Michael Porter Jr., KCP, Aaron Gordon. I don't doubt for a second that that's a contender, right? So it's like, I don't want to say like you can't win with Luka. I think that's insane. Again, they made the Western Conference Finals last year. Like, yeah, he did a lot of that single-handedly, but like, so he doesn't even necessarily need much. But at the same time, it's like, how are you going to miss the play-in potentially when you're a top five player? Though it's hard to say, you know, in terms of building around him. And then if guys want to play with him, I would think they would. I would think he'd be a fun guy to play with if you can get past the constant bitching and whining and just some of the, you know, he's not like the least dramatic superstar. Like, there's just always a little something with him where it's never like all good, it feels like. But the guy's a basketball savant. Like, I would think dudes want to play with him. I think Kyrie wanted to play with him. I think Kyrie probably enjoys playing with him. I think they see eye to eye. And I don't know, man. Like, it's tough. Yeah, I guess you have,
isn't it, Brett? Like, it, like, we are talking about literally, like, they just lost to Philly, right?
Did they lose?
They did lose. I mean, we can get into maybe later on in this podcast or maybe next week about like some of the first team all NBA stuff. But like, I just, if you would have told me before the season started that Luka Dallas wasn't even going to make the playoffs, I would have said, dude, you're crazy, man. Like, there's, I would have probably bet my house that they at least make the play-in, right? Like, there's no way. Like, I just can't believe it's gotten this bad. And while I agree with you 100%, Brett, like, some of this eventually has to fall on Luka a little bit, but like, the front office, man, like, we talked about it enough with the Jalen Brunson thing. You let that guy go. Okay, maybe he's not going to be the same player that he is in New York right now, but that's still a dude that was a key player for you to get to the Western Conference Finals, and you just let him go for nothing. And then you gave up a bunch for Kyrie Irving without any – I still can't believe they did it. We talked about it on the pod. You traded for him without any reassurance that he was going to resign there. He could just leave you high and dry.
Good.
And if you get him in a sign-and-trade, okay, man, like – what are you getting back?
He doesn't even have to agree to that, because, like, you know, as a free agent, he can go wherever he wants.
Yeah.
Like that. If it happens, if you can arrange something with a team he wants to go to, like, he would have to okay that, obviously. So that's not even a guarantee. Like, so I don't know. Is he going to want to come back? Maybe. I mean, I think he likes it. I think he likes Luka. But yeah, man. Like, I'm looking at it now. So they're now 37-40. OKC's in a tight game with Molly Hunter's Detroit Pistons, but if OKC wins that, the Lakers beat the Bulls, which it looks like they're about to do. Like, there's a little gap now where Dallas is out of the play.
OKC has a tiebreaker over Dallas as well.
They do. So yeah, and they're OKC's probably, well, I don't know. That game's tied at 100, but the Lakers are definitely going to beat the Bulls. They're up 12 with 3 minutes left. I probably just jinxed them, but then there's going to be a little gap now between the 10 and the 11, which is Dallas. So like,
that's what I'm saying.
It's becoming, that's how fast things can change here. Like, when we started this podcast, it was like, hey, they'll probably make the play-in. And now it's like, I don't know, man, maybe they won't. And again, that's just like, there's so many things. Like, you just can't blame only Kyrie. You can't just blame kid. You can't Kyrie's just blame.
Great, I'm not blaming Kyrie at all. Kyrie's been great.
No, me neither.
I'm not blaming him at all.
I hated all the stuff that, you know, started to inevitably come out like in the last few days, just about like, oh, Kyrie's killing another team. And it's like, are you guys even, you're just haters. Like, people are just haters. That's really not, it's on him. It's more on kid. I'd say it's more on Luka, and it's certainly more on the front office.
Check this out, man. So we're going to transition to OKC here, because I think you touched on something that's very important. But Dallas is, they have 5 games left. All in the month of April. They don't play again until Saturday. They play at Miami, at Atlanta on a back-to-back. Miami-Atlanta on a back-to-back. And they're probably flying, I'm going to assume, they're flying to South Beach, and they'll get in Friday. So just who knows? Miami.
Who else do they have? Do you have it in Friday? Right, like,
then they go from Sunday against Atlanta. They get 2 days off. Then they play Sacramento, Chicago, and San Antonio. All 3 of those games are at home.
They could lose 4 of those 5 easily.
They could, man. They could.
They'll beat San Antonio, but they could lose to Chicago. Sack at that point could be locked Chicago's into their 3 seed.
Chicago's going to have something to play for.
Yeah.
Sacramento could have something to play for. And I mean, could. Seriously,
Atlanta and Miami, I think definitely do. Like, there's going to be Miami at least three of those games. Yeah, Miami needs to win
tonight too, so they need to keep winning to stay. They're already in the play-in, I think, for sure. I don't think they're going to drop out. I'll have to check that. But I mean, like, we just talked about Dallas's defense. We know that Sacramento, stat-wise, they're the best offensive team in NBA history. They're going to put up a lot of points. Like, they don't have the easiest schedule. But moving on to the Oklahoma City Thunder, who currently, as of right now, I mean, this could change because they are tied in a close game with the Detroit Pistons. They're 37-39. They're 6-4 in their last 10. I think, like, to your point, Brett, the West is so crazy. I think a couple weeks ago we thought they were dead in the West. SGA had, I think he was hurt, then he had COVID. But he's come back. He's been a force. He's having.
He's actually out tonight, though, and was out yesterday.
He's averaging 31 a game on almost 5 rebounds a game, 5.4 assists a game. He's been phenomenal. They are 16th in offensive rating, 10th in defensive rating. And, dude, I think SGA, man, I don't want to go in too much about it. We'll save it for the next podcast. I think he's played his way on to first team All-NBA. I mean, we'll kind of see how some of that stuff shakes out. But if he makes the playoffs, if the Oklahoma City Thunder make the playoffs, whom everybody – I will say this. Everybody but Brett Usher thought that they were going to be really bad this season. This is a hell of a season for them, man. Hell of a freaking season for them if they make the playoffs.
For sure, man. Like, dude, they're better than I thought they'd be. Like, I predicted they would win 30-plus games. And that was – a lot of people were saying they might not win 20. So that was kind of a hot take at the time. But they've won 37. You know, they might end up winning 39, maybe 40, depending on how things go. But that's kind of the thing with the Thunder is just, like, they've overachieved, man. Like, I love them. I love a lot of their players. I think they've got an unbelievable young core. SGA, I agree, Steve. Like, probably – he's certainly in the conversation for All-NBA first team. I mean, we'll probably talk about that next episode. But assuming Luka is a lock at a guard spot, I think it probably comes down to SGA – and Donovan Mitchell would be probably the two that I'd be looking at for first team. But he's right in that conversation. And then outside of him, you know, Jalen Williams is fantastic. Josh Giddey has really improved. Like, I don't think his improvement has gotten enough credit. You know, they're very well coached. They play super hard, but, like, they shouldn't be this good. And I think that, again, that speaks a lot to the coaching. And it just speaks a lot to the chemistry and kind of the identity and the ethos of this team. So I think, like, the defining characteristic of this Thunder season is overachievement. And that's not to be like, oh, they're just kind of a bad team that got lucky or just no. Like, overachieving is good. Like, that's what you want. And so it bodes really well for their future, but if they make the play-in, that's pretty damn astounding, considering their roster. Like, they started Jalen Williams, J-A-Y-L-I-N, Williams at center. So he's been their starting center. Like, they don't have a real big man on this team. Like, it's like him and Poku and, like, Jeremiah Robinson Earl right now. And SGA's out. And, like, and this team is fighting for a play-in berth. So I think J-Dub deserves a lot of credit. The rookie of the year stuff might be a little far-fetched, but not too far-fetched. He's definitely the second.
He could finish second.
He's definitely second. He's an absolute lock for the all-rookie first team. I know we might talk about that lastly on this episode, but, like, what he's done, you know, like, he's carrying this team. Like, I've got the game on right now. I'm kind of looking at it as I talk, and, like, he's carrying this team to a critical victory, potentially. They're only up 3 right now, but yeah, man, he's that guy. So they're making it work, man. Isaiah Joe, a guy that was waived by the Sixers, is now starting at 2 guard for them and just raining threes. Like, they're just making it work.
Dumb Philly.
Yeah, that one's crazy. So yeah, man, I don't know. OKC, like, no numbers really jump out, you know, about them other than, like, SGA's individual numbers and what J-Dub has really done the second half of the season. But, like, they're again, they're better than they should be, but like that is not in any way a knock on them. That speaks to Mark Daigneault.
Any other year, he'd win Coach of the Year. Literally any other year, he would win Coach of the Year. Even if Sacramento was the sixth seed, he'd win Coach of the Year. I think
he should be a finalist.
He should be number two. Not a doubt in my mind, he should be number two.
Definitely one of the three. I mean, for sure a finalist. I'll say that. If he's not, that's pretty bad. But I think people are starting to take note of him and like it's just like his ability to motivate these guys and get the most out of his players. Like they play hard. Nobody enjoys playing against the Thunder. I think that's like the ultimate compliment you can have as a young team.
They're phenomenal, man. And I think to your point as well, man, they are must-see TV anytime you watch them. So, like, seriously, like I think they're a great league pass team. Obviously, they're not going to get a lot of nationally televised games, but they're super fun to watch, man. And SGA, I think he's going to do it, man. I think he's going to get first-team All-NBA.
What do you think about Donovan Mitchell?
He's got a strong case. I mean,
I think so.
No, okay, we're going to get into this. Here we go. I guess we can kind of tease it a little bit. I just don't know if – I don't know how they're going to vote. I just don't know how you can criticize Dame for not being first-team All-NBA. Obviously, he's not going to play another game. I think he's played below. What just happened? Why did your jaw just drop there?
I wish NBA.com would update their standings quicker. Like they'll tell you that
they don't do it till the morning, pretty much.
It's so dumb. Is there any good reason for that?
Everything's on a delay. Yahoo has gotten a lot faster.
Regardless,
they would be in the seven regardless right now. Yeah,
it's just weird because like you can click on the game that just ended and it has the updated records for both teams. Now it says the Thunder are 38-39, but when you click on the standings, it still says the Thunder are 37-39. It's like, why wouldn't that just automatically update? It's 2023. Like what the fuck? That pisses me off. Cause I always have to like, you know, like don't you just want to see where everything's at?
No, I know. Yeah.
It should be. There's no good reason for that. In my opinion.
All right. I'm going to go grab a beer.
The other team that we got to talk about, though, is Minnesota. They've been really, really good the last couple games, I guess you could say. Since Karl Anthony Towns came back, they obviously won a big, big game the other night against Golden State. Karl Anthony Towns hit a huge three-point shot in that game, but it kind of looks like they are firmly in the play-in. They're 39-37. They're playing Phoenix tonight as we record this, so we won't know who won until tomorrow night. The game just started. They're 5-5 in their last 10. They're 3-0 since Cat came back. They're 23rd in offensive rating, 12th in defensive rating. Just kind of watching them play over the last couple weeks, I think that Mike Conley has been a revelation for them. I think that he is an adult in the room and he gets players in the right spots and makes the right play. I think he's also settled down Rudy Gobert a little bit. Obviously, they're doing a lot of this stuff without Anthony Edwards, who has been hurt. And I didn't realize it. It's kind of crazy. You don't realize it that Karl Anthony Towns has been out since November. I believe that's correct. He's been out for a very, very, very long time. This team hasn't been healthy. They seem to kind of – can we say this? I don't want to jinx Minnesota, but can we say they kind of seem to be coming around at the right time? Brett, what are your thoughts on Minnesota?
Yeah, it definitely seems like they're clicking at the right time. And obviously getting Cat back is huge. That raises their ceiling tremendously. I agree about Conley. Like D'Angelo Russell is obviously a very nice player, but just in terms of fit, namely with Gobert and the pick and roll, Conley makes a lot more sense. Like I was looking earlier at Gobert's numbers before and after Conley. And I think he was like, you know, 13-11 before Conley and like 16-12. Since Conley's been there, like he's just been more engaged and that, you know, and they have, you know, D'Lo and Rudy were just like, this was their first year together. Whereas Conley and Rudy obviously have quite a bit of history and chemistry. And so that's been big, like kind of unlocking Rudy, like turning him into a really effective player again. So I like that move a lot. And then, there's a few things. Jaden McDaniels really coming into his own the last few weeks, like he, just as an offensive player, creating for himself a lot more, just just scoring more. That's been, I think, pretty big for them. And then Kyle Anderson has really stepped up. I was looking at this earlier today. Like, Minnesota's won 8 of their last 13. And over that span, Kyle Anderson has averaged like 12, 7, and 7. Like, just, he's just been playing outstanding. So, you know, he's about as good of a role player as you could have in the NBA. And they've really been leveraging his playmaking as well. So, like, between him and Conley, they've got a lot of playmaking. And it's getting Gobert easy looks. And it's getting Jaden McDaniels good looks. Anthony Edwards, like you mentioned, has not been 100% recently. But, you know, when he gets up to speed, like, they're a dangerous team. I just like their length, really. Like, when you, you know, it's pretty obvious. When you look at their starting five, okay, you have Conley and Edwards, and then you have 6'9", 6'10", Jaden McDaniels, 6'11", 7-foot Cat, 7'1", Gobert. And then off the bench, you have Naz Reid and Kyle Anderson. Like, they're just like this really long, defensive-minded team that has this elite two-guard that could be the best player in any game or even maybe a series, you know, if he gets rolling. So they're a dangerous team. And, yeah, they've won 4 straight, 8 of 13. And they're, like, neck and neck with Golden State in that 7-6 kind of battle in the West, where if they could get the 6 and match up with Sacramento, I think that would be a really interesting series. I think that's obviously what they're trying to do. They are playing Phoenix tonight. That game probably just tipped off a little while ago. That's going to be a huge one in terms of the implications in the standings. So if they could get the 6 and play Sac, I think they've got a chance to win that series. And that would be just a really fun clash of styles. You've just got this giant kind of defensive minded team in Minnesota, and then you've got just this super high powered offense that's a much smaller team in Sac. And it's like, if they go, you know, can you play Gobert against Sacramento? Like, how does that work? Or is Sac just going to be too small to deal with Minnesota's size? Like, that's kind of what I want to see right there, is that matchup. And so Minnesota's going to have to win a few games here to get that, to surpass Golden State for the 6. But I think that's the goal, and they're looking like a dangerous team. We're like, you know, probably a higher ceiling than last season's team. They obviously haven't had as good of a season, right? But, like, if you're just talking about ceiling, like, I know, Steve, you and me were both pretty high on them after the Gobert trade. We were optimistic.
They won over 50 games, and I thought that Anthony Edwards would be in the MVP conversation.
We were very optimistic, but it might have just been a little premature. And, like, maybe now we're seeing what we had envisioned. But, like, I feel like just so much of the talk about them before the season was, like, Towns and Gobert. And we've barely seen Towns and Gobert with all the time that Towns missed. He's basically been out since Thanksgiving, like you said. And then even now, since he's come back, he's only played 2 games. Like, I just feel like we still haven't seen much of them. And the jury's still out on that fit specifically.
Well, and to be fair to us, we never said or proclaimed that Minnesota was going to be a playoff juggernaut with the Gobert trade. We both said, I more than you said, this is going to be a regular season powerhouse similar to what they were in Utah, right? Because look, you could make the comparison, Anthony Edwards, Donovan Mitchell, right? You got Rudy Gobert. Karl-Anthony Towns is the best shooting big man of all time, and maybe you can stagger their minutes enough where Cat is getting mismatches. Like, the potential was there to do all that. Now, I'm curious. I would have liked to have seen this team fully healthy for a multiple month stretch with Mike Conley, obviously with Karl-Anthony Towns not being injured, to see what they could do. I thought it would be very interesting, but I don't want to talk about Minnesota too much because I do have Ethan coming on next week. We're going to do a State of the
Union. There you go.
Minnesota episode.
He's been good.
Finally, Ethan.
Yeah.
Come on.
The guy's only been hounding Mikey and I for freaking months here. Hey, Jesus Christ, man. We're going to talk about Minnesota. Yeah. All right. We got it. We're good. They finally made the playoffs, or they're in the play-in. We'll get you on. But Brett, real quick before we get out of here, you wanted to talk about your all-rookie team. However, before you do, I want to give you a stat real quick.
Is this some Marjon Beauchamp propaganda?
Oh, come on, man. You know if that
– No, it's Johnny Davis.
If he played on
– Oh, Johnny Davis. There you go.
He'd be first team all NBA rookie. You know, he'd be amazing. That's fine, dude. The Marjan breakout season is coming next year, but that's neither here nor there. As of tonight, because of this game against the Detroit Pistons, only three rookies in Thunder history have three games with 25-plus points, 5-plus assists, and 5-plus rebounds. They are Kevin Durant, Russell Westbrook, and Jalen
Williams. J-Dub. J-Dub is special, man. He's special. He really is. Yeah, he's an all-rookie first-team lock. And it's funny because, like, even like a month ago, I remember, month and a half, I was talking about it on Twitter, like, wait, is Jalen Williams all-rookie first-team? Like, he was in my mind because I'm a Thunder fan. I like him a lot. But I was like, is he actually going to make all-rookie first? And now it's like he's number two, clear. So, like, he's that goes to show just what a strong – he's been really good, I'd say, like basically since like January 1st, but even just the last, say post All-Star break, the guy's been brilliant. And, you know, like he carried them tonight. Like that was a big win.
I saw the comeback on Twitter when you were talking there a minute ago, and I was like,
"Yep, no, he's a baller."
Give us kind of your early, and we're gonna do a podcast about this in the next week or two. Really, really deep on this, but give me your kind of like all rookie NBA team.
Yeah, well, I know we're gonna do like an awards pod, but it's hard to get them all in. So maybe you know get some of this all rookie stuff out of the way now because I think I'm pretty locked in. Mostly. I'll tell you where the only part where it gets tough. First team: Paolo Banchero, absolute lock. Jalen Williams, absolute lock. Walker Kessler, I think, has to be an absolute lock. I'm going to go Mathurin.
Thank you. You better have. You know that's my guy.
He's had some ups and downs, but I think if you look at his entire body of work on the season, he probably belongs on there, man. And I like him a lot. Don't get me wrong. And then I got to go Keegan Murray because the Kings are so good, right? So he's on by far the best team of any of these guys I've mentioned. And then he's also going to set the single season rookie record for 3-pointers, which is, you know, pretty significant. And it's not just like he's chucking them up. He's shooting like 41% on pretty high volume from three. So just his contribution to, you know, the three seed in the West as a starter, like it's hard to overlook. Ivy is the tough one to leave off. It's especially with the last couple of games he's played. He was really good today. He was outstanding the other day. I think he had 32. So that's tough. I think he's having a really underrated rookie season. I think Mathurin, Murray, Ivy is really close for me. I posed a poll on Twitter saying, like, assuming Paolo, J-Dub, and Kessler are locks, you know, who should be the remaining two? And the poll voted for Mathurin and Murray, and I think that's what I'm going with too. But Ivy's a pretty tough omission. So needless to say, he's on my second team along with Jalen Duren, his teammate, Jabari Smith Jr., who I think has done more than enough
last month or so.
Yeah, we talked about this a couple episodes ago, but I think he's
– You know what I think, man? If you were to bet on a rookie to take a jump from this year to next year, I think Jabari Smith Jr. would have – I'd bet on him to take the biggest jump out of anybody.
Yeah, I could see that. He's had some really strong play lately. So I think it's enough to get him on a second team. You know, he's not in the first team conversation, in my opinion. But so I would have Ivy, Duren, Jabari Smith, Jabari's teammate Tari Eason, one of my personal favorite rookies. And then I'd go with Jeremy Sohan as my fifth member on there. And then honorable mentions would be like Nembhard on the Pacers, Shaedon Sharpe, of course. There's probably another like strong honorable mention that I'm missing here, but that would be it though. So first team, I'd have Paolo, Jalen Williams, Walker Kessler, Benedict Mathurin, Keegan Murray. Second team, Jaden Ivey, Jalen Duren, Jabari Smith Jr., Tari Eason, Jeremy Sohan.
It's just super promising rookie class.
It's it really is.
Like everyone you just listed, I'm like, goddamn, they deserve it. Like it's just, that's a deep class right there. It's going to look good in a couple years too, because you still haven't seen Chet play yet.
Yeah, exactly, man. Yeah, and then you have guys like Shaedon Sharpe and Nembhard and AJ Griffin. Like, There's yeah, and then Chet, like, you know, next year's class is gonna be crazy with him. So yeah, anyway, that's my all rookie teams. I don't know. I feel like it's pretty straightforward, probably not super controversial. I know, like, the Ivy Mather and Murray thing was a little controversial on Twitter. I was just feeling it out with those polls, kind of in preparation for this, honestly. And but other than that, I don't think people would argue too much with that, right?
Brother, I think that's the least controversial.
I mean,
thing I've heard in a long time.
Yeah, I think most people would have it this way. Maybe they have Ivy instead of Murray, or maybe I Ivy think a instead lot of
people.
Of
a lot of people might have Mathurin instead of Kessler, like Mathurin 3, just kind of based on, like,
yeah,
his early.
I mean, I wasn't even. Yeah, you could call him a lock. He's probably.
I would think he'd be like a top 3 or 4 lock.
Yeah, he probably.
I think the real debate is for that 5 spot between Keegan and Ivy. That's where it kind of got spicy for me.
If it has to come down to 2, it probably is Keegan and Ivy. I was thinking Keegan was a lock just because of the team success, but dude, it's all rookie.
It's a rookie award.
It's not really a factor. So yeah, if I had to pick a 4th lock, I probably would say Mathurin, and then between Keegan and Ivy, like, in a vacuum, it's really close, but I just personally will slightly lean Keegan.
All right, well,
because of the team success.
Let's lock it in today. Who do you have for your rookie of the year?
Oh, I know what you're going with this. Oh,
no, I'm not going to be that guy, man. It's still Paolo. It's still Paolo. But it's not.
I want to see Jalen Williams so bad.
It's not that.
So
bad. It's not that big of a gap.
I know. It's Paolo. I was listening to No Ceilings. Our good friend Nathan Grubel. He has Jalen as his rookie of the year, so he's taking that.
I'm not mad at it. Like I said, I think Jalen on the whole has been a more positively impactful player in the sense of contributing to winning than Paolo has been this year. I said it on Twitter yesterday, no rookie plays less like a rookie than Jalen Williams. And some of that is his maturity. He's almost 22. He's a little on the older side. Some of that is just his game and just his natural composure. Like, he deserves a ton of credit. Paolo's had an amazing rookie season though. And the Magic are pretty fucking good too. Like, they're almost like Thunder East, if you think about it. Like, they haven't been quite as good, but that's another team that nobody really wants to play. They're tough. So, no, I'm going Paolo Rookie of the Year. But J-Dub is second, and the gap's not huge. But nobody's even close to those. It's those two, you know, but whatever. There's only one, and it's not like co-Rookie of the Year territory.
Right.
To me, it's Paolo.
Steve, who you got? Rookie of
the
year.
It's Paolo.
Paolo, okay.
I mean, I think Jalen is making a very, very strong case, but I do think that Paolo has had a worse situation in Orlando, and he's been doing it since the beginning of the season.
He's so good. I think people just got bored with him, or bored with the hype or something. Like,
well, we all said every time this award was over in November, and Jalen.
Right. So I think people are looking for a reason, and it's like Jalen's really, really good, but like when you just watch Paolo for a game, it's like, oh yeah, like this is different.
I think Paolo's the obvious choice, but if you're like a league pass junkie and NBA Twitter guy, it's like Jalen is like the NBA hipster pick.
If I'm trying to win a championship this year and I have a choice between Jalen and Paolo this year, I probably would take Jalen, but like that's not what this award is about. Yeah, I would. Yeah, I think he's more of a winning player right now. I would bet on Paolo long-term as being the better player. I think Paolo's going to make a lot of all-star teams. Jalen Williams is going to be really good, but, like, you know, Paolo's on another level in terms of talent.
I agree with you, Brett, but let's be clear here. Like Paolo, he's going to be the number one option. He has the potential to be the number one option on a championship.
I don't know if Jalen is there yet, or if he ever will be.
Jalen's like elite glue guy material.
Yes.
Maybe even great number two. But like, I do think Paolo's on another level. I'm just saying right now, in terms of like who you would want on your team in a playoff series, like I think it's close at least. I don't know. Paolo's looked dominant against NBA competition too, though, a lot this year. Jalen's just rock solid.
Before we get out of here, I got to ask you. Are you excited in the next year or two to rock a Atlanta Hawks Jaylen Brown jersey? Or are you going to rock the Trae Young Boston Celtic jersey?
He's excited for the Portland Trail Blazers.
I can't do
Brown
either,
jersey.
Man. Both those guys are younger than me, so I can't wear their jersey. That's my rule. But I do think it's my rule, man. Yeah, man. No, I think Jalen to Atlanta makes some sense, but that's a topic for another day. But yeah, close us out, Steve.
Yeah, we need off-season pods.
I had to get it in because I know Derek is going to be listening to this, our good friend of the pod, Derek Michael, and he's going to be pissed that we didn't talk about Boston at all. So I just had to – I thought, all right, man, I'll give you a little Boston right at the end, and you know he's going to sit there, maybe punch the steering wheel. Who knows what he's going to do. But, hey, man, dude, this was super fun. We will be back next week. Like I said, we're going to be dropping two pods next week. I got the State of the Union with Ethan. That'll be recorded soon, and we'll drop that next week. And then, obviously, we've got the main show with myself, Brett, and producer Mikey. So for everyone that listens, everyone subscribes, really appreciate you guys. And, yeah, we'll see you guys next time. Peace.